The trauma that I've been through, I just want to manifest that into something beneficial. Everybody handles things completely differently. I do feel blessed. The way I handle things is, you know, will be beneficial to me and other people as well. Because you just really don't know what people are going through. And when they see a piece like that, a piece that's relatable to them and so many other people, it kind of gives them the push just say, okay, this guy gets me. He doesn't even know me.
Welcome to Better Together with Kosti Epifontsev, a podcast on parenting, business, and living life intentionally. We're here every week to bring you thoughtful conversation on making your own path to success, challenging the status quo, and finding all the ways we're better together. Here's your host, Kosti Epifontsev.
Hey, y'all, this is Kosti, and today I'm here with my guest, Nathaniel Wheeler, artist, digital illustrator, and graphic designer. Nate, before we get into this episode, I want to talk about how you started experimenting with different media from a young age and what inspired your path as an artist.
I'll tell you what, I think the first thing that I remember illustrating, I think I was about three. I was in the bedroom with my grandma. She was ironing some clothes and I just sat there right beside her bed. And I had a piece of paper and an ink pen and I just looked at it. I just looked at, you know, what she was doing and I just drew it. I just began drawing it and drawing it. More of the iron. For some reason, that was the most important thing that I drew at that time to me. I recently just saw it again, going through a bunch of bins, old bins in the attic. It looks like a cookie. But, you know, up until this day, my grandmother keeps on referencing it. Like, do you remember the first time, you know, you showed me a picture, what you drew? I said, I really don't until she showed me again. I just got chill bumps because we started from there.
Yeah. Is it like the sharp lines of the iron that attracted you? Like, what was it about the iron that stood out?
Me being little as I was at the age of three, I think how I was sitting down, crisscross applesauce,
you know, right,
looking upward towards this, at the time where I thought it was like this humongous, this board with this iron, just steam coming out of it. I don't know. I just thought, I just really wanted to illustrate it. I don't know, just something as little and so simple as somebody ironing. It just came to me. I said, I have to replicate that in some way.
So what type of work in terms of your illustrations are you doing now? And what type of work do you enjoy doing the most?
Since I graduated, I've had to kind of challenge myself a way that teachers, you know, haven't done for me before. Since, you know, I don't have to go through a syllabus or nobody's telling me to like do this or do that for a grade. I actually have free rein in what I can do now. I've been working more heavily on typography and illustration, especially illustration, really just combining art and design and having a strong, concise narrative to my art.
And I'll be honest with you, the one class that I failed in high school was art. I know, you're not supposed to fail art, right? And I'm always fascinated by people who have, it's the patience. Because here's the thing about art for me personally. Whenever I start like drawing something, it has to be perfect. And if it doesn't end up being perfect, the moment that it's not perfect anymore, I immediately stop. And I just can't come back to it, you know? And so for people that either have the will to say, okay, it's never going to be perfect, or I can turn it into something perfect or what I would consider that, it's rather astounding. Now, you started as a civil engineer at Tennessee Tech and eventually transferred to graphic design. What did that experience and also that degree provide you?
Let's start from the beginning. It taught me a valuable lesson.
Okay.
Always listen to your mother. She knew and I knew that I never really wanted to be a civil engineer. At first, it was just because it paid well. You know, on a day-by-day basis, you like to use both sides of my brain, creative and logistics. Civil engineer was more like logic, less creative. You have stuff like AutoCAD, SketchUp, anything that you can combine to make something work. That part I loved, but I knew in my heart that I wouldn't be a civil engineer for the rest of my life. You know, that transition between, you know, me being distraught, my grandmother encouraging me, I knew it had to be done.
Did you have to like go to school longer or did you change your major pretty early on?
Pretty early on, but it did add another year.
It did add another year. Okay.
I went to my advisor. I said, listen, I got to change my major. This isn't working out. You know, we talked and talked. What are you good at? What are you not good at? Computer science was in the mix. English was in the mix for some reason. But then we settled on art. And she says, what about art? You know, what about, you know, you can do this, you know, visual arts. I said, when you say art, I think broke. She suggested I take the course of digital design, graphic design. And it still didn't really hit me at some point. But, you know, I said, why not? I'm really good at art, or I like to think I am.
Sure.
Let's give it a try. That was one of the best decisions I've ever made.
Well, and a lot of people don't realize this because, you know, when we say art, we think like Picasso, right? Yeah. You know, you think you're going to be like making paintings and trying to like sell them to museums and stuff, private collectors. There is a huge, and I know this personally because me and Morgan do it day in and day out. There is a huge need for people who have that part of their brain turned on or are good at creating content and creating specifically like your like you what you do day in and day out, graphic design. I have no idea how to do it. Morgan is proficient at it, but I mean, I think it would take her a lot more training to be able to be a quote unquote professional at it, right? So the fact that you identified, or at least your advisor identified it early, is great, you know, because the door is wide open. You can do anything with it. And there is a huge market for it.
Mm-hmm.
You've said before you want your art to have a name, meaning your brand and themes as an artist shine through even when it is an assigned piece. Will you share a few of those distinctive traits with us? And what does your brand as an artist look like today?
So it really started maybe my junior year of college. I was comparing myself to all the other artists, all the other designers in this class. Amazing work. So much more talented than me, I think. But there was something that everybody had done that was just the same formula. It felt like to me, they just did it for the grade. And I kind of wanted to be a little bit different than that. Again, these guys are stellar. But I wanted to have some really raw meaning to it, just very authentic, something that, you know, that would only be relatable to me, but just to everybody that views it.
That pulls people in.
That's right.
With a story. That's so right. It's not just a piece of art. It's also a story behind that art. So is that what your brand is? Is it storytelling?
Combining style with substance.
What made you want to do that? Was it something like over the course of your life, you said, I want to tell my story and I'm going to do it through art? Or what inflection points got you to really want to make sure that people knew who Nate Wheeler was through his work?
The trauma that I've been through in the past, I just wanted to manifest that into something beneficial. Everybody handles things completely differently. I do feel blessed the way I handle things is, you know, will be beneficial to me and other people as well. Because you just really don't know what people are going through. And when they see a piece like that, a piece that's relatable to them and so many other people, it kind of gives them the push just say, okay, this guy gets me. He doesn't even know me.
When you told your family that you wanted to be a graphic designer, did they support you?
Oh, absolutely.
So there wasn't any like, you'll be a broke artist?
No. No. My family, my grandmother especially, it just seems like she's proud of everything that I do. I'm so blessed to have her in my corner to where, you know, whatever decision I make, she'll follow me every step of the way. And she was happy for me that I changed my major. She knew that I would be a lot happier with her not knowing the challenge, you know, this major actually gave me. She was even more proud of me that I overcome those challenges and just turning something like that into, you know, what I do now.
Why Tennessee Tech instead of all the other colleges that are in Tennessee? You know, I mean, you could have went to an HBCU. You could have went to MTSU, Vanderbilt. You could have went to an area that has a higher concentration of African-American populations, but you chose to go to Tennessee Tech. Was it because of the engineering background? And then when you decided to not be an engineer anymore and become a graphic designer, you still stayed. So tell me what it was about Cookeville that drew you here, but also why you decided to stay even after you were no longer an engineer.
I'm going to be honest with you. Going to the university wasn't really my first choice.
Okay.
You know, I was suggested to go to a trade school. School isn't for everybody. School wasn't, still isn't for me. But I figured, civil engineering major, Tennessee Tech, it's an hour and a half away.
Yep.
It's close, but it's not too close. You know, it gives me room for me to stretch my wings, get on my mom's nerves a lot less. You know, that kind of separation really actually just brought us closer together in the long run. And I stayed because even as an engineering major, I still felt like I had a place in this town, in this university.
So it wasn't weird going from Nashville. You went to Hillsborough High School. It wasn't weird to go from Hillsborough High School to Tennessee Tech.
It actually was at first. I remember actually the first day that I unpacked everything in there. I went home the first day. When I stepped down in Cookeville, it felt so foreign. In the university, like on campus, I didn't see anybody that looked like me, and I just felt so out of place.
Mm-hmm.
And so right away, I said, okay, we're going to be fine. It's going to be okay. Let me unpack. You know, let me meet my roommate, which is still my best friend till today. He's my brother. I love him to death. But I didn't know what to do. So what happens when you don't know what to do? You got to go back home. You got to recuperate.
Sure. Sort yourself out. Yeah.
These engineering classes being predominantly white, again, I still felt that I didn't belong in a way, you know, physically, like in there, like mentally and with my major. I felt a sense of the imposter syndrome.
I see.
Ever since I got Legos, I knew that I wanted to build. I knew that I had a skill to use with my hands. But, you know, walking into the auditorium, I'm just like, God, what did I walk myself into?
Mm-hmm.
What did I literally walk myself into? But it was just a lesson. You really think you want something, but, you know, at the end, you kind of see that everything happens for a reason, that at the end, it just benefited you.
And so I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm assuming that at this point, you know, you've spent 5 years in Cookeville. So you obviously feel welcome in Cookeville. You feel represented in Cookeville. I'm assuming, again, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, how did you pivot from, was it the fact that you changed your major, or was it the work that Dr. Rob did with diversity and inclusion and make students of color feel welcome and a part of the community? What changed your mind so that you felt, you know, this is my town. This is a place for me.
To be honest with you, it wasn't even the major change. You know, when I changed it to graphic design, I still was the only African-American student in there. But I said, okay, history is going to repeat itself, but I want to make a change. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to learn all these new softwares, these 3-hour classes. And I had like 3 a day. I'm in the same exact spot for 9 hours, plus some breaks in between, obviously. But I said, okay, I'm going to make this mine. We already made the change. Let's go through with it. And maybe a pride thing too, which I just didn't want to change my major in the first place because I didn't want to feel defeated, but I didn't quit. I didn't accept defeat. I changed my major, kept on going, graduated. But it just felt different. Because maybe it's something that I was confident I was really good at. Even dealing with the new software, it was a time. It was a heck of a first semester. But after that semester, I said, I know I can get really good at this. I know this is new to me, but I can get really good at this. And so that summer afterwards, YouTube, illustration videos, typography videos, all these tutorials. It's amazing all the stuff you can learn in YouTube that you can in a university, actually. Plus, it's free.
Exactly. And I saw your portfolio and it looked fantastic. Did you create that when you were still in college?
Yes.
Okay. So correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you spent a lot of time working on your craft. And this happens a lot. So I was born in Russia. I moved to the United States when I was 5 years old. And not to say that I received any type of undue racism, but you had the occasional like comment about being a commie, and I come from a Jewish background, so you have that. But I'll tell you, if I wasn't working, I'm sure I'd let all that stuff get to me. But when I sink my teeth into a project and I'm focusing on building something like this business or my life in general, I don't let any of that get in the way. So do you think that you were just so hyper-focused that you felt like that underrepresentation that you felt when you first came to Cookeville just went away because you were just so busy focusing on your craft?
I was definitely focusing on myself at the time. I didn't really let that get to me. And you mentioned, you know, Dr. Rob.
Yeah.
And the BCC. I was offered to be in that space, but I knew, you know, my first year, I just really had to be by myself. I had to be by myself for a little bit. And I'm actually glad that I didn't join because they came to me. They accepted me. And just meeting one person, it felt like I was meeting 5 people.
Mm-hmm.
With one person, it was maybe 5 or 6 connections. And those people led me to those people. We just started networking.
You did a collaboration with the Black Cultural Center, the BCC, that you were referencing, titled Brutality. Because the very essence of this project is a reality most white people will never fully understand, especially from a Black perspective. What did this project mean to you, and what does it represent?
So at first, this was around the time, junior year of college. I was starting a project for, I think it was Design 2 or Design 3. And I was so close to it. I had all these new skills I had learned, these techniques I learned from YouTube. And I was so close. And the project was due, I think, 3 days after. I'm in the library, sitting down, and the news pops up on my phone. And it talks about George Floyd's killer has just been prosecuted. And I don't know why I froze. I felt so many emotions in that moment. I felt justice has been served. I felt sad. I was angry. I actually teared up a bit, actually, because I was thinking more about, you know, his family, more than him, actually, like just like the victims, because, you know, he wasn't the only victim. And so I was looking at my computer screen, looking at this like this cute stuff that I did. I was like, I'm looking at him like, what is this? I mean, this is cool and all, but what does it mean? And I think right then and there, I wanted my art to really mean something, to really grab you and to make you think. And so I did just that. Brutality in America, it's called. It consists of five pieces, you know, fear, abuse of power, justice, and the cycle. And all the figures in these illustrations are silhouettes, meaning I never try to disrespect anybody for not knowing. It's not being ignorant. It's just not knowing. When presenting this project in front of, again, the predominantly white class, I went up to present and asked everybody, raise your hand if you're afraid of getting pulled over. And of course, everybody raised their hand. And not much of a gamble because there was just one other black person in there. But intentionally, I picked out this other classmate and asked her, why are you afraid? She says, I'm afraid of getting a ticket. And, you know, we all agree. We all know that. I said, yeah, I mean, I'm broke. I'm a college student. I don't want to pay $150 for going 5 miles over the speed limit. And I said, that's fear. That's a real emotion. And I'm afraid too. But instead of being afraid of being pulled over, I'm afraid of my life. The same emotion, just different aspects. And she understood that. Everybody, especially the instructor, understood it. The project itself spoke a lot of words, but I think the way I had presented it, still being talked about today in other art shows, just the respect that I gave everybody to kind of open their minds and not feel dumb about it, about not knowing. After the presentation ended, there were tears. There were open minds and open hearts. And again, later that night, I had people texting me. I was like, Nate, I kind of want to learn some more. Will you teach me? Will you, you know, kind of give me some counsel? Because you're my friend. And I mean, not like obnoxious about it. Not like, okay, yeah, I got black friends. Let me see how they feel. No, just very just open and like welcome about learning new things about my culture.
Absolutely. There's a professor in tech, Dr. Kehenmi. She teaches African-American studies. Took her course. I had tons of questions for her. Obviously, she's a professional. She's a doctorate professor. And she always says that the most important thing that we can do to help with race relations, because even though everybody says it's not a problem, we constantly keep finding out that it is to have those conversations, is to seek out people that are willing to talk about it. There's a lot of people who don't want to talk about it. You open the door with your project to say, this is how I feel. And you knew, obviously, by calling on the class that a lot of people were going to have questions even after the fact. There's a lot of people that don't want to do that. I mean, it takes a lot of courage, because I'm sure moving forward, you're going to have another opportunity to present the same kind of material. And I believe, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I believe that you want to. I asked you earlier while we were waiting for everybody to arrive, I said, what's your dream job? And you said you're doing your dream job. So I'll ask you again, what would be your dream job?
To make people feel and to think and to appreciate and to learn through my art, through my voice, my presentation. I've got a story to tell. I feel like I'm just getting started. And you're right, I do want to do it again. I can't wait till I get the chance.
When you created that painting, Shoes Untied, and you presented it at Impact, tell that story for the listening audience. Because, I mean, the whole reason why you're here today is because Jessica and I were sitting at the Impact Gala a few weeks back, and I said, that's fascinating. He's fascinating. His story's fascinating. I've got to talk to him. So please elaborate on the whole entire project and what it means to you.
I really wanted to start the project on my dad's birthday. I didn't know anything about an art show or anything. I just, not necessarily hone in my skills, just conceptually do something that I haven't really done before this deep. I had thought about it and thought about it. Made some sketches, wrote words, paragraphs, stories. But I just couldn't get myself to do it. I wanted to start on his birthday, and then I wanted to end on his death day. Every time I thought about it, I would just be so sad. I would just get so teary-eyed and said, okay, so what? What if I complete the art? What then? You know, I guess I thought in the moment it was going to be my own type of closure.
Mm-hmm.
But
did the opposite.
It did the opposite at the time. But then our good friend Brandon, he was kind of down on his luck trying to find a venue for the art show. You know, I got in touch with Andrea Kruska. Also, I love her a lot too. I love her to death. And they communicated. He got a venue. He tells me about the venue. And then I'm just like, oh, God. Okay. I mean, I got two options. I could, you know, just give him the stuff that I've done before, or I could just do something new. At the time, it was a given. I said, listen, I really don't want to work on anything else. I'm fully employed now. I don't think I have enough time. But I don't know. In a way, him telling me that and him telling me, you know, when I'm supposed to have all the art in, that was a push for me. I said, Nate, this is something that you've really never done before. Something so personal and so vulnerable. And I think that's what I was kind of afraid of at the time, especially showing somebody, showing people. I'll be a little vulnerable, you know, mushy here and there, you know, with, you know, a couple of people, especially with people you don't know. I just didn't have the gumption at the time, really. That was just conceptually, mentally was just a huge challenge for me. And so I got to work and I asked myself, so how am I going to do this? You know, I really don't even have a concept yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really make sketches a lot. I just write. I write and I read. And so I was just thinking about all the memories. So little I remember from me and my father. There's not a lot you can teach a six-year-old kid, but there was just one memory, one lesson in particular that he taught me was to tie my shoes. The joy this man had on his face, tears just coming out of his eyes, watching his son finally tie his shoes by himself after it was like 3 hours of teaching him. I had the shoelaces all backwards. I had the tongue twisted. I put my shoe on backwards, I'm sure, you know, he said, no, like this. And I was like this? He was like, no, like, I could actually paint another picture of right now. I was on the stairs and he was just right there in front of me. How proud he was that, you know, after all that time, his son accomplished something, gets so excited, scurries to take his flip phone out of his pocket, flips it up, takes his 10-foot antenna out, calls his mom, my grandmother. Mom, he learned how to tie his shoes. He learned how to tie his shoes. He did it. He was crying and yelling, and I was confused, and I was crying and yelling too. I was like, I thought I did it. I thought I was right. From then, up into his passing, you know, at the age of 6, I didn't know what past meant. I didn't know what gone meant. Wait, is he going to be at work longer? You know, will I see him again? And my grandma, she tells me that's the hardest thing she ever had to do is just tell me that your dad's gone, he's not coming back.
What happened?
He was on his way to work. He was on the road, on his motorcycle. And he stopped at a stop sign, but the 18-wheeler behind him did not.
Oh my gosh.
Ran him over, flipped. Tire came off the trailer. Hit him in the head with a motorcycle helmet on. It crushed half of his skull.
Yeah. Wow. And so this picture is essentially a way for you to honor his memory,
mm-hmm.
and the things that he was able to teach you in the short amount of time that you guys had together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you said something when you were up on stage at Impact. You said that that moment gives you the confidence to try anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but the fact that he's not here, I know as much as you wish that he was, well, you don't want to waste the time that you have. You really want to accomplish something great. I think that's pretty awesome.
That's right, and I appreciate that. Since his absence, spontaneous, not by choice, it changes the narrative with an African-American father leaving you, but that was just life that got him. From then to now, the challenges, all the dark days, the fear of violence in my life, in those moments, with him not being here, I'm looking at my shoes, and it feels like I'm asking myself, how do I tie my shoes without him? How do I get myself together without him? And what is going to tie him for me?
You got good people around you, too, to help you, though.
I sure do.
Mm-hmm. What advice do you have to young artists, specifically Black and minorities, about honing their skill, finding experience, and turning their passion into a professional career?
Shoot for the stars. The amount of students I've met, a class above or a few below, just by, you know, talking with them, you would have never really known how talented these students are. And I ask them, no, what are you doing in this field? I don't know. It was just easy. I mean, I could just skate by. You can take the easy road, but do you enjoy it? No, not really. I just want to, you know, just get this over with. You're spending all this money, all this time, all this stressing for 4, maybe 5 years, and you're not enjoying what you're doing? I am so blessed to have people in my corner to encourage me to take the extra step, enjoy what I'm doing, being proficient at it, being happy above everything else. If you're not happy, then what are you doing here?
Right.
Do something that you're passionate about. Whatever you put into it, that's what's going to come out.
So we always like to end the show on a high note. Who is someone that makes you better when you're together?
I have to say two people. Miss Lily Mae Wheeler, my grandmother, and Jessica Lee Moss. Some of the most beautiful inside and out, just incredible women that I know. Both teach me to be patient, understanding, knowledgeable. And the good part about it, it's not one-sided. I teach them too. They teach me every day. I teach them every day.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Better Together with Kosta Yepafontsev. If you've enjoyed listening and you want to hear more, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Leave us a review, or better yet, share this episode with a friend. Better Together with Kosta Yepafontsev is a Kosta Yepafontsev production. Today's episode was written and produced by Morgan Franklin. Post-production, mixing, and editing by Mike Franklin. Want to know more about Kosta? Visit us at KostaYepafontsev.com. We're better together.